We're talking today about changing our lives, possibly a minimalist lifestyle. What do you think about that? With me in the chair is Dylan Dolan, who's a business coach, trainer and founder of Forward Thinking. And we've been watching the documentary Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. And oh, it's got us going, hasn't it, Dylan?
Yes, I do love the homework that we have to do sometimes for the show, Sue. And this was extremely rewarding. So rewarding, in fact, it's had an immediate impact on my family life. And I look forward to the positives it's going to have once we declutter all the wardrobes.
So in essence, what this documentary does is highlight people in the United States choosing to live maybe a different life to many others. So we're in the age of consumerism. We like our things. We like to have lots of stuff. And this really goes against that. It's not saying you can't have things, but it is saying that you might be happier with less.
Yeah, both of the the key characters in the film, Ryan and Joseph, they just reached a point where they'd, I guess, reached a zenith where they were looking at their lives going, I'm not really happy with being in the rat race, continuing to try and get that next promotion and buying lots of stuff and being in the consumer process. And then looked around and said, what is it that makes us happy? And they just started stripping away and simplifying.
Well, yeah. What was the sort of things that immediately, you said it's impacted your family. How was it immediately?
So for us, it was, there's a lot of stuff in the film where they're just looking at how they're traveling around the US on their tour, for example. And he's able to go around with one travel bag, with X amounts of pieces of clothes and one item. There's other people in the film as well that, there's another guy that travels around the world who only travels with two carry-on bags onto the planes, and that's all he has in his life.
Yeah, he has no home.
Yeah,
he
no
just
home,
travels and lives from those two bags.
Absolutely. And as we were watching that, it just really appealed to us that how much stuff have we got that we don't need? How much stuff have we got that actually doesn't add any value? And how much stuff have we got that just we don't really even know it's there? It's just been left there.
So you said already your wife saying, OK, we're going to declutter the house.
Yes, I was over the moon.
So why was that?
Well, because it's something that just... These things just kind of sit there, don't they?
No, in your
they?
House.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. These things just sit there. And interestingly, I think also, first world problems, we also have a maid where we don't always have set places where things go. And what we find is if there is something there and we say, can you clear the front room or whatever, things then get put into one wardrobe or placed in a different place. So we're not always sure where things are. So,
do you ever clear things up, though? Do you ever sort things out?
I declutter my office space. I do declutter my office space, but then it starts to pile up with paper and it starts to pile up with books and it starts to pile up with other stuff that I'm working on and the next project and the next project. Interestingly, me and my wife aren't great at it. Our daughter is amazing. She's now in Russia. She's staying with her grandma for 3 weeks. And I had to go and try and find something to borrow from one of her drawers in her room. And I went in. I was horrified at how organised and minimalist she's living her life whilst in this house where me and her mother are actually not great at it, let's say. I was really impressed.
Well, one of the reasons it caught my attention is I've been decluttering my house and I accumulate stuff for sure. I don't buy a lot, I don't spend a lot, but I definitely acquire a lot.
Yeah.
And so I started sorting a few things out a few weeks ago and I'm like, I've got way too many books. Do I need all these books? So I went and took them to House of Pros and, the secondhand bookshop and drop them off there. Then I'm like looking at I'm sort of looking at my spare bedroom and thinking, well, it looks okay actually. I've had family staying, so I'd already done a bit of a sort out, and I was like, it looks okay. But then I opened some drawers and some cupboards and I've got in there piles of paperwork and I'm like, hang on a minute, how far back do I need to keep bills and things like that? I've got bills from the UK, just never throw anything away, so now I'm going, no, I absolutely don't need to go back 7 years and keep all this paperwork. So that's like almost the next layer of decluttering. You know, I've already done some clothes, but now I'm looking and thinking, you know, I can still get rid of more clothes. I don't need all this stuff. Let's give it away. Let's recycle it if we can. And as you're going through that process, you start to feel good. You know, I like having things around me, but now I'm thinking, it feels nice when I walk in the house and there's more space, you know. So I think it's an interesting process. And then as you're getting into it, you think, well, how far do you keep going? When do you stop decluttering and reducing these things in your life?
Well, it's really interesting you say that it's a satisfactory feeling when you start removing all of this stuff and you know it's not there. Because I do think that when you know there is like the monster of all paperwork lurking in the cupboard, it becomes something that, yes, I must sort that out. And I think you kind of like it has an energetic connection that can be quite draining. That you know it's there, you know you want to deal with it, you know you want to sort it, and every time you're not, it's just soaking up some more energy from you. I used to have a boss at work, and he used to say exactly that. If I give you a piece of paper, you have to do it, otherwise I know I'm then going to be drained by you not doing that piece of work.
So what do you think? How is it for you? Do you like to have a good clear out? Is it something you do regularly or you never do it at all? And if you were able, or would you let things go? You know, could you live with less? How much more could you live with less of? You know, I don't know, whether it be living with one car instead of two, or I don't know, whether it's about how many shoes you've got, or what is the ornaments and the things that you gather in your house. If you think about it, how many things do you own? And I'll play for you here a little tease, if you will, the trailer to the documentary Minimalism, a documentary about the important things, with Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. And when we come back, we're going to be hearing from Joshua himself and understanding better his journey on the road to minimalism and what he's doing with Ryan around the States. Have a listen to this.
We spend so much time on the hunt, but nothing ever quite does it for us. And we get so wrapped up in the hunt that it kind of makes us miserable.
Black Friday shopping mania is still playing out tonight at malls across America.
High hopes of saving some big bucks on those holiday gifts.
Stores filled to the brim.
In some cases, it did turn violent.
We've, as a culture, have lost our minds.
There's no question that what it means to have achieved the American dream has increased tremendously in material terms.
This is not something that just happened yesterday. This is something that has been sold to us over the past 100 years by those that want to make a whole lot of money.
Now that's what I call a good-looking car.
You have this thing that you were obsessed about, but then the new version comes out, and now you no longer care about the one you have. In fact, the one you have is a source of dissatisfaction.
People are beginning to recognize that they've maybe been tricked.
There is no out until you become aware. You're not going to get happier by consuming more.
Ready?
I was born ready.
There's nothing wrong with consumption. The problem is compulsory consumption. We're tired of it. We're tired of acquiring things because that's what we're supposed to do.
When I heard about minimalism, it wasn't about just getting rid of my stuff. It was about taking control of my life and stop being told what to do and actually deciding what I wanted to do.
When I first started reducing the number of things in my life, I found out that I had 51 things in the entire world.
We've probably sold or donated at least 90% of our stuff.
As I started to move that stuff out, I was able to finally realize what I had sacrificed.
I don't know what the most common three words are in American homes. I don't know if it's I love you or if it's I want that.
This same thing that's not making us happy is also causing the degradation of our habitat.
We're going to have to give up a lot. The secret is that a lot of that we're not actually going to miss.
What I found with minimalism is it's a way of saying, let's stop the madness.
When you recognize that this life is yours, and that it is your one and only, and when that seeps directly in your bones, and you recognize that this is it, everything changes.
Dylan Dolan, founder of Forward Thinking. He's a business coach and trainer. And we're exploring a lifestyle of minimalism and asking you how you would feel about that. Maybe you already do that to some extent. So living with less, and under, when you purchase something, it's with purpose. It has a meaning behind it. Now, somebody's texting here to say, if you buy things you don't really need, then it's not far that you will sell things you need. It's a quote from one of our listeners. And Kevin's asking about where you can sell books, non-fiction, and high-value academic classics. So if you've got any ideas to help Kevin today, one suggestion is to try, you know, some of the social groups connected to all of our compounds and areas, districts around the UAE. There's Dubizzle, of course, but actually quite effective now is tapping into community groups. Do you have one on your
compound? No. But, you know, there's some really good ones. Like Expat Mums is a really good one to get into. They've got a really good community group there.
So Dylan and I have been watching the documentary Minimalism, a documentary about the important things, with Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. Now, our producer Joe caught up with Joshua Fields Milburn over the weekend. We wanted to talk to him directly. So we start off today. We're going to be listening to him over the next half an hour or so, but really explaining how he took the road to minimalism and how it felt, what it felt like to clear out all his stuff.
So Ryan and I both run the website, theminimalists.com, and we've known each other. Ryan and I have been best friends for 25 years now, since we were fat little fifth graders. And we both grew up really poor in Dayton, Ohio, in the States. And it's a sort of rust belt, blue-collar manufacturing town. And growing up, I had, you know, a single mother. We were on food stamps and government assistance. And I thought the reason we were so unhappy growing up is because we didn't have any money. And so when I turned 18, I went out and got a entry-level corporate job, a sales job. And I spent the next decade climbing the corporate ladder, making more and more money. However, I didn't experience a sense of contentment from that. It added some comfort to my life, which was actually a bit confusing, but I started making some decisions with that money that wasn't good. And what I realized, sort of looking in the rearview mirror, is that growing up, the reason we were unhappy had little to do with money. And that's true. We didn't have any money, and that more money could have at least added comfort to a fairly meager childhood. But the reason we were so unhappy growing up was because of a bunch of repeated poor decisions. And so, of course, when I started making money in my 20s, that money allowed me to just amplify those poor decisions. So I started making even worse decisions by having more money. Now, let me be clear. It doesn't mean I think money is evil. I'm not allergic to money now. I think money is a tool, and we can use that tool to better our own lives, to add a sense of certainty, but also to contribute beyond ourselves in a meaningful way, or we can use that money to leverage a bunch of bad decisions that will put us into debt, that will make us anxious, that will tie us to a lifestyle that may never make us happy. If I felt like my life was out of control, I had achieved the things I was supposed to achieve. I was successful in the corporate world, but I didn't feel successful at life. I felt successful in a very narrow sense. I made good money, but I spent even more money than that, so I had a lot of debt. And so I stumbled across a few different people online. There's a guy in our film, his name's Colin Wright, and he was the first guy who sort of introduced minimalism to me. I found one of his videos online, and he was just talking about, he was a world traveler, and at the time, I think he was 24 years old, and everything he owned fit in his backpack, and he called himself a minimalist, and I wasn't really sure exactly what that was, but I also knew that I didn't want to live a life just like him. He is a perpetual traveler. He likes to travel to a new country every 4 months or so, and everything he owns sort of fits in the overhead bin of a plane. But I also knew that while I wanted to simplify my life, I didn't have those same desires. I wanted to own more things than that. You know, I certainly get value out of owning a kitchen table, and I have a desk, which I was writing at this morning, and I own a bed, and all of those things are really hard to travel with, but that's okay, because I don't plan on being, you know, this sort of peripatetic writer. And so what I learned is that there are other minimalists out there with different recipes. I stumbled across a different guy. His name was Leo Babalta, and his wife Eva, and they have 6 kids. And so that was the other side of minimalism. I said, wow, there are minimalist families. And then I stumbled down different paths. People like Courtney Carver, who's also in the documentary, and she was, you know, 40-something-year-old mother to a teenage daughter, and then Joshua and Kim Becker, also in the film. I found that they were living a minimalist life, sort of in the suburbs, and you know, Joshua had a full time job and a car, and they had a house together, and they were raising two kids. And I said, wow, there are all these different recipes for minimalism. Whether you're a single 20-something-year-old guy like Colin, or you're in your 40s, 50s, or 60s. I mean, and now I'm even finding people who come to our events. We do a lot of different live events. We've had great grandmothers and 93 years old who have showed up to our events. We also have teenagers who show up, and we're all asking similar questions. We're asking, how do I live a meaningful life? You know, we all have this one life that we're given here on earth, and how do I live that life intentionally? But then also, how do I regain control so I can focus on what's important? And I found that minimalism was a way that helped all of these people focus on what they were passionate about and live more deliberately. Once I got rid of the external clutter in my life, I was able to start looking inward and focus on my internal clutter, you know, the mental clutter, financial clutter, spiritual clutter, whatever you might want to call it. And once I looked inward, I realized, man, there's so many other things I can get out of life. If I simplify things, I can regain time so I have control over my health and my relationships and my creativity and passions and personal growth, and I can contribute to my community in a meaningful way. And these were all things that were appealing to me. Although my life now is considerably different. You know, 7 years later, I have a partner, and we live together, and we have a 4-year-old daughter together. And so that minimalist lifestyle, it is actually a little bit harder when you have a family. But I think that's okay, because I found that it's even much more important when you're dealing with other people, because it makes room for the most important things. And so, while my life is different right now, those principles of simple living, of intentional living, are still the same for me. And so if you come to my home today, you're probably not going to walk in and say, oh my God, this is a family of minimalists. You'd probably just say, wow, they're really tidy. And that's because I don't own much, but everything I do own adds real value to my life. Each of my belongings, like my car or my clothes or my furniture, it has a function. And so as a minimalist, I like to think that everything that I own either serves a purpose or brings me joy, and everything else is out of the way.
Minimalism, a documentary about the important things with Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. We've been talking to Joshua on the phone in the United States over the weekend, so we're going to hear more from him. And your thoughts as well on 4001. What could you do without? What could you absolutely not do without? Letting things go, we're going to find out how to do that and the process. And Dylan Dolan's with me, founder of Forward Thinking. He's a business coach and trainer. What's something you absolutely couldn't let go of?
Something I absolutely couldn't let go of? Oh, that's really put me on the spot. I'm not that materialistic a person. I don't have many things that I would say really, really couldn't let go of.
What about family photographs?
Okay, I hear that. But it's one of those things, isn't it, when you ask people the question, what would you grab if your house is on fire? And it always comes down, people always say their family albums.
But I don't know. Some people absolutely not. Say, you know, I don't need that. I don't need it. It's all in my mind. I've got the memories.
It's all on Facebook. You know, no, I know people that actually consider Facebook their photo,
sure,
photo album,
yeah,
of their life.
Yeah. So what could you absolutely not do without? And we're all looking at really consumerism, but consumption, but being purposeful, I think. So let's hear more from Joshua now, and really exploring the purpose and understanding better that purpose of minimalism.
The decluttering is sort of the first step, and it's a very important first step. I mean, you feel a weight lifted right away by getting rid of that excess. Just because, if you think about it, the material possessions in our life are often a physical manifestation of what's going on inside us. So if you have a cluttered external world, quite often I found we have a cluttered internal world. And so by dealing with that outside clutter, then we were able to look inward. But like I said, it's sort of the first step. It is not the end result. And I think that's a really important thing. You know, I think anyone who's listening to this could go rent a gigantic dumpster and throw all their stuff in it and be utterly miserable. Yeah. You just come home to an empty house and sulk after removing all your pacifiers. And really, that's because it's really about, minimalism is about where we go after the clutter. And so by jettisoning the excess stuff, then we're able to start filling our life with what is important. And so it's different for each of us. And so when someone's thinking about embracing a minimalist lifestyle, or even if you don't want to be a minimalist, but you just want to simplify things a little bit, the question that I often ask, and it's an important question, I asked this question of myself early on, the question I ask is, how might your life be better with less? And the answer to that question is usually different for most people. You know, for some people, it's, well, I'd have better control of my finances if I had less, or, wow, my house would be a lot tidier, or maybe I'd have more time to work on that passion project that I've always wanted to work on. And so by answering that question, it helps you identify what the benefits of minimalism are, not just the how-to side of things. I think we all understand instinctually how to declutter our closets, but we need to understand the why-to. What's the purpose behind minimalism for you? And I think it looks different for each person. The benefits tend to skew toward that person's interests, desires, values, and beliefs, as opposed to being one sort of blanket thing. And so you can have an empty house and be totally okay with that. You know, I could be contented in an empty space. But the truth is that there are a lot of things that add value to my life. So if you walk into my home now, you'll see a couch. You'll see, you know, a closet with some clothes in it. You'll see a desk. You'll see a bed. You'll see, you know, a dresser and a coffee table and a kitchen table. All of these normal, what we perceive to be normal things. But what you won't find is excess stuff. And that's because I'm constantly asking another question. And that question is, does this thing add value to my life? And I've asked that question so many times that it's become more of this intrinsic feeling, almost an emotion of sorts. When I can look at an object, whether it's a t-shirt or an ironing board, and I can say, does this add value to my life? And if so, then I give myself permission to keep holding on to it. But the things that add value to my life today, they may not add value to my life tomorrow. And so I always have to be willing to reconsider that thing. You know, my daughter's 4 years old now, and she has certain toys that she plays with right now. But 5 years from now, 10 years from now, she won't be playing with those same toys. And so I encourage her to ask that question as well. And then we, as a family, let go together when things aren't adding value to our lives.
So that's a dialogue to be had, isn't it? What add values to my life? What would go in the stay box and what would go in the out box? You know, the in and the out of what you could let go of. And then when, as you let go of things and you create more space, I wonder then how we are with that. I know that's the purpose, yeah, one of the reasons for doing this. But then I'm like, isn't part of the reason that people fill their life with stuff is because they think it makes them happy? So if you're going to remove all that stuff, what do you do with all that space, whether it's internal or external?
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's the dichotomy of the process, isn't it? And as you said, you buy stuff to fill gaps in your life, but then when those gaps reappear, what do you do with it? My thinking is, by going through the process of removing, and he used a great term there, pacifiers. By removing those pacifiers, you then get to a point where you are, I would like to think, you become more at peace with yourself to be able to deal with that space. And you start finding those passion projects. You start finding those other things that you want to do with that space and with that time that actually has more value and is living a more deliberate life.
Mm. So what about you? Do you think you'd be able to do that? Do you think it's something you'd want to do? Is there a real need? You know, obviously people are happy when they purchase stuff or they have stuff, and they really do get happiness from that. So let me know what you think, if you agree with this or not. Nikki says, I'm loving the show as I'm reorganising my kitchen this morning. Good on you, Nikki. There you go. Inspiring people to declutter, reorganise. And what he does talk about there as well is having control, which I thought was very interesting. So part of our consumption behaviours, patterns, may be because we're influenced by others, whether it's in advertising, whether it's through media, or whether it's our peers, family, neighbours, colleagues at work, you know, they've got that car, I'll get a car like that or similar. So if you're starting to change your life a little bit and even embrace the minimalist lifestyle fully, how does that affect your relationships with those that don't follow that kind of relationship? Let's hear what Josh has to say about this.
There are certainly people who were in my life in my 20s who are not in my life now. And the reason being is throughout my 20s, most of my relationships were birthed out of convenience or proximity, meaning maybe we lived in the same neighborhood, or you know, we grew up together, went to the same school, or we worked at the same office building. And so many of my relationships, they didn't necessarily have the same values as me. Doesn't mean they were bad people. They just had different values, different interests, different beliefs from what I had. But I was spending 90% of my time with those people, and as a consequence, I accidentally forsook the people closest to me. The people that I cared about most got the least amount of my time. And so I've reprioritized my relationships over the last 7 years so that the people who I'm closest to get the most of my time. And then the people sort of on the outer circle, they get less time. It doesn't mean that I don't appreciate them or I don't try to add value to their lives. I do. I just make sure that the people who are closest to me, you know, my partner or my closest friends, you know, sort of my inner circle of people, that I treat them like they are my inner circle of people. But I also find that, no, I don't offend people anymore because, A, those people know who I am and they want me to be happy. And likewise, I want them to be happy. And so what I do now is I do a good job of setting expectations. It doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect every time. And like I said, people will still bring over gifts occasionally. But because I do such a good job throughout the year of setting those expectations, people understand that if I don't get value from something, if they give me something and it doesn't work out for whatever reason, then I'm going to find someone else who can get value from that thing. So I'll donate it or try to find it a new home. You know, giving the thing a new home instead of me, you know, tucking it away in a closet or an attic or something where no one will get value from it. And I'll go out of my way to explain that to people, but then I won't just say no to things. Instead of saying just no gifts, what I'll often say is, here's the types of gifts that we would love. And usually it has to do with an experience. Like maybe it's concert tickets, or maybe you can buy us a babysitter for a night so we can go out, or maybe we can have a shared experience together. Or if you absolutely have to get a physical thing, I found that quite often I'll ask people for consumables, right? So a really nice bag of coffee or a nice meal, something that once you have the thing, then it's gone and you were able to enjoy that together. And so in a way, it was also an experience.
Interesting talking there, Josh, about how friends in your 20s, it changes. And I think that can happen anywhere. We've talked about it on the show before. Your values change, or you know, you grow apart. But sometimes it is with purpose that we actually defriend people on Facebook, for example, or, you know, because they're not really our friends or they're not really adding value. They're just on our Facebook page, but we don't even know these people.
Well, especially when you start seeing some diatribe that's really against your own value system, when there's some incident or something going on that's political, etc., and suddenly you go, oh, okay, I didn't realize that your leanings were over there. It's really interesting, you know, we talk about Facebook and all the friends we have on there. I, as you know, we've spoken about this before, I gave up Facebook mostly a year, maybe 2 years ago, and it's been a huge relief to me because that was a lot of clutter for me. And following watching this documentary, It's made me think maybe I could go back to Facebook, but what I need to do is declutter the friends that I have in there and only then remain with a very small amount of people that actually truly resonate with my values, and encourage them not to post cats playing the piano all the time.
So the things we're prepared to let go of and the things that we're absolutely not. Following a minimalist lifestyle and what that means. There's many different ways to be a minimalist, and we're going to be sharing those with you. And we're also going to be hearing more from Joshua when we come back. Living the American dream, he talks about that. Also touches on news today, you know, coming out of the United States with Trump withdrawing from the Paris climate negotiations.
Yeah, impressive move. Yeah.
So we'll hear his thoughts on that. We've been talking to Joshua over the weekend there in the United States, and the American dream is all about having it all, I think. I'm British, Joshua's American. He talks about that and the notion of what that really means.
in much of the Western world, because of that idea of sort of this meme we've been sold of the American dream as being a template for happiness, I think it is not. I don't think it's the template. I think, you know, you can have your house in the suburbs and your white picket fence if you want that, but it's not the template. There are other ways to live. And I think quite often people these days are questioning what is valuable to me. And quite often it has very little to do with those things. It costs us a lot of money. You know, I can remember when I was simplifying my life over the course of about 8 months, I got rid of about 90% of my material possessions. And I was so surprised by like how many things that I owned that I no longer used. Many of the things I had never used, but they were just sitting there. And as a result, I had to, you know, I had to have a bigger space, or I had to have a storage locker, or I had a basement full of stuff. I'm not sure if you know this, but the average American household has more than 300,000 items in it. And so many of those things add value to our lives, but most of the things don't. And so they get in the way. And so I think it's really up to us to determine what things we're going to hold on to, what things we're going to let go of, and then just as important, what new things are we going to bring into our life? Because being a minimalist isn't about getting down to, you know, 100 items and that's all you own and then all of a sudden you're happy. The things that add value to my life are going to be different from the things that add value to your life. I'll give you an example. My writing partner, Ryan, who runs theminimalist.com with me, he is an avid outdoorsman. He loves, you know, skiing and snowboarding and mountain biking, and those aren't things that I do personally. And so he gets a ton of value out of owning a snowboard, for example. But for me, if I owned that snowboard just because it was something I was supposed to do, I would be getting no value from it at all, and it would just be taking up space. And so I found that the cost of a thing goes way beyond the price tag. So we'll buy something and say, well, that thing costs $100. But then there are all these other hidden costs we don't think about. There's the cost of storing the thing, and the cost of the space the thing takes up, or changing the thing's oil, or replacing the thing's batteries, or what about the space the thing takes up in your mind? And so we have all of these additional costs that go way beyond the price tag. And I found that minimalism is a way to be a little bit more aware of what the actual value of a thing is beyond that price tag.
And then we spoke to Joshua about Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Change, President Trump. That's news coming out of the United States in the last 24 hours. Business Breakfast were talking about it this morning, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But here's what Joshua says.
Yeah, it's a rather unfortunate thing that we, you know, we're in a position right now where we don't understand what our consumption is doing to the rest of the world, right? You know, if the rest of the world consumed like the United States, for example, we would need 4.1 Earths to sustain that unchecked consumption. And really, the only way that we get there is we can't afford, we can't even like financially afford that kind of consumption. In the United States, we have $12 trillion worth of consumer debt. That's not government debt, that is consumer debt. It's hard for us to even wrap our heads around what $12 trillion worth of consumer debt looks like. If I were to give you an example, if you went out and spent a dollar every single day, I'm sorry, every single second, $1, $2, $3, $4, it would take you something like 31,000 years to spend $1 trillion. And yet we have $12 trillion in consumer debt. And so you know, the average American has four credit cards. One out of 10 Americans has 10 or more active credit cards in his or her wallet. And that is just leading itself to a society that is more stressed out than ever, has more debt than ever, and it's tied to a lifestyle that is not bringing them joy. In fact, it's really doing the opposite. It's breeding discontent.
So it's all about trying to live a more purposeful, mindful life, and in eventuality then therefore be more happy. Now, some would say though that you need consumerism and you need commercialism to a point for economy to drive work, to drive finance, for the world to run and operate.
So absolutely, we do need it does drive commerce. There is an industry there that actually puts money back into all of the economies. The issue we have is that it's now being done to a scale where we are trapped on this hamster wheel of continual consumerism. And also the way that it's being done, because it's being seen as a great opportunity to sell into people, it's now been kind of abused. There was a great, great quote from the film where they said that if you look at sort of marketing for children, for example, great target market for some retailers, and the actual cost, the spend in the year 1986 was $120 million that was marketed to children in the year 1986. By 2016, that amount of marketing to children had gone up to $17 billion a year. And so that's how much we're being attacked by these messages to continually buy. And when you think about children as well, they're very vulnerable to those sorts of messages.
Well, it's not new then, is it? And on the 15th of July 1979, so nearly 40 years ago, President Jimmy Carter spoke to the American nation about the crisis of confidence in the American government, values and way of life. Carter challenged citizens to unite and address the problems in America by addressing the energy shortage and consumption. The speech was later dubbed the malaise speech, even though Carter never used that word. Have a listen to this.
In a nation that was proud of hard work, strong families, close-knit communities, and our faith in God, too many of us now tend to worship self-indulgence and consumption. Human identity is no longer defined by what one does, but by what one owns.
There, so already words being spoken on this 40 years ago, so yeah.
And so, you know, Jimmy Carter, often considered one of the joke presidents of the US, I always remember looking back at what he did and what he said, and I was always... He was almost ahead of his time. It's really interesting.
Why do you say joke president?
Because he was. They consider him a laughingstock because they pilloried him so much in the press, because they continually called him the peanut farmer, because that's how his family had made their money. But he was trying to drive through solar energy. He wanted to actually lose the ties with just an oil consuming nation. He was doing stuff then. He wanted to introduce concepts and ideas then that are now being, you know, done now. It's very interesting when you listen to that speech. Imagine Obama saying what he said with Obama's tone, and I just think that it would be delivered in a very different way and received in a very different way because of how he actually delivered the message.
It's the Sunday Quiz, only on Dubai Today on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And we've got two people ready to play. Nikki and Dean, hello, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Hello there. We've got Judge Joe here, is going to be adjudicating. Hello to you.
Good afternoon.
Oh, hello. There you go. Here you are.
Good afternoon.
Judge Joe. She's put all the questions together today for our Sunday quiz. And this is to play for a great prize, actually. 500 dirham voucher to spend at a restaurant in the Madinat, Jumeirah. So let's start with you first, Nikki. You texted in earlier to say that this is rather apt this morning because are you decluttering or reorganising your kitchen?
Yes, I mean, I'm loving the show. I've got a day off of work. I've moved the house. I've downsized, and my God, there's a lot of stuff in my house. I had a really big declutter before moving. We've come into a smaller villa, and there's still so much to do. And I'm trying to work the kitchen work triangle as we speak. I've moved the coffee machine probably about 8 times. I think it would be just easier to give up coffee altogether. But I'm sticking with it. And yeah, Joshua's interview this morning is helping me, actually. There's a lot of plastic I think I don't need anymore.
Oh, that's good. We're glad we're helping you. And it's great to have you playing the quiz today. And hello to Dean.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Dean. Now, so, Dean, are you someone who likes a lot of stuff? Have you got a lot of things?
I do have an awful lot of stuff, yes. I can't seem to ever seem to get rid of any of it. So I seem to accumulate things as you go through the years.
So does it make you happy having all these things?
Deliriously.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, then it's serving a good purpose. That's what I say. Well, it's good to have you on board as well for the quiz today as well. So listen, this is how it goes. I'm going to ask you three questions each, and the person with the most questions right is the winner. You're going to get 5 seconds to answer your questions. And the if we go to a tiebreaker, Judge Jo is here. She's adjudicating. We will give you a decider question to get our winner at the end of the 4 questions in total, if you know what I mean. Now, Dylan, we'll get you to play as well, Dylan. You've
yes.
not seen the questions, so for a bit of fun. So, Nikki and Dean, are you ready to play the Sunday quiz?
Yeah.
Yep, go for it.
Excellent. So, Nikki, we're starting with you. Here's your first question, and it's a multiple choice question. This expression means that something or somebody is more interesting or complicated than it first appears. More than meets the... What body part is it more than meeting? Is it A, eye, B, mind, or C, bones?
A, eye.
You're saying I. What are you saying?
I.
And you're both absolutely... correct. Dean, here's your question. What's the name of the Dutch post-impressionist painter born in 1853 who was well known for painting self-portraits and said the following? I often think that the night is more alive and more richly coloured than the day.
Vincent van Gogh.
You're saying Vincent van Gogh. What are you saying,
yeah,
Dylan?
Yeah, I said van Gogh as well.
Yeah.
He's the only one I know.
And you're both... Nikki. Nikki, here's your second question. Take some more tea, the March Hare said to Alice very earnestly. I've had nothing yet, Alice replied in an offended tone, so I can't take more. You mean you can't take less, said the Hatter. It's very easy to take more than nothing. Nobody asked your opinion, said Alice. This is from the 1865 novel written by Lewis Carroll and is the story of a girl who falls through a rabbit hole into a fantasy world. What is the title of the novel?
Alice in Wonderland.
And Dylan?
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland.
And you're both... correct. Dean, here is your second question. Please, sir, I want more. This quote comes from the Charles Dickens novel published in 1837 and is the story of an orphan living in a Victorian workhouse, immortalised in the 1933 film adaptation of the novel. What is the name of the film and book?
What is Oliver Twist?
Dylan?
Oliver Twist, yeah.
Oliver Twist,
like
you
Jeopardy.
Are... Nikki, here's your third question. I nearly was going to burst into song then, but I won't. I will spare you the trauma of hearing me sing. Nikki, a little less conversation, a little more action, please. These are the lyrics from the song A Little Less Conversation, performed by which American singer, actor and idol, often referred to as the King of Rock and Roll?
Elvis.
What do you say, Dylan?
Absolutely, Elvis.
I thought you were going to sing as well.
No, I was so tempted. My lip went up, everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, you're correct. So, Dean, here's your third and final question. And it's a multiple choice question. This expression means that there is a lot of something or too much to count. More than you can shake at. What is it that you are shaking? Is it A, bat, B, a stick, or C, a racket?
Shaking a stick.
What do you say, Dylan?
Yes, a stick.
And you are both correct. Scores on the doors, Judge Jo.
3-3.
Three
Dylan's
all.
Very excited.
We love a tiebreaker. We love a tiebreaker. So here you go. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to give you both the same question, and the person with the closest answer is the winner. So here you go. According to professional organiser Regina Lark, the average US household builds up an abundance of stuff. To the closest amount, how many items does the average US household contain?
Oh,
So, Nikki, you first.
I would say something like 2,500.
Okay.
Sorry. 250,000.
250,000.
My last answer.
Dean, what do you say?
Individual items.
Yeah, how many items does the average US household contain?
Gosh, I'll say 100,000.
100,000, okay. Give Judge Joe, she's there. So
the maths answer stress.
Feel the brain, yeah. So who is our winner and what is the answer? The answer is 300,000 things.
And Nikki is the winner.
Wow.
Yes, Nikki.
I know it. They're full of clutter, aren't they?
I'm sure the minimalists will be very... no wonder we need the minimalists, really. So, yeah, well done, Nikki. You are
Thank
the winner. 300,000 things is the average amount of things that US households contain. So you are the winner today. You get the 500 dirham voucher to spend at a restaurant at the Madinat Jumeirah. Dean, unlucky, but well done. You got through to the tiebreaker. So thanks for taking part.
Thank you. Sorry, Dean.
Nikki and Dean, have yourselves a great day. Thank you so much for taking part in the Sunday quiz.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
All right. Take care. I'm liking it, loving it. Thank you very much, Joe, for the questions.
Pleasure.
And, of course, we will be playing the Sunday quiz again next Sunday. So if you'd like to take part, you can SMS quiz now with your name for next Sunday's quiz. So we're going to come back and we're going to be talking more about minimalism. We're going to be talking to Kelly Lundberg, who does amazing things here in the UAE. She's a personal stylist. She offers her service. She kind of helps people detox their wardrobe. And we're going to be finding out about the Project 333, which is a minimalist fashion challenge that invites you to dress with 33 items or less for 3 months. Have you done this? Could you do this? Do you already kind of do this? Dylan Dolan, who is he's his own fashion icon, his own way.
It has been said, Suzanne, yeah.
And I know you for sure have adopted in the last couple of years where if you see something you like, and a shirt or shorts or trousers or whatever, you'll go, actually, I'm going to buy 3 pairs of those or 3 of those, but I'm going to wear them so they'll get their use. So when you see it, you know that you like it, you know you're going to wear it. So in a way, that's smart.
Yeah, well, for me, and there are certain shirts, certain shorts that I actually like to wear. And so I just got into a habit of saying, right, that's something that I really like to wear. I feel really comfortable, suits me. So rather than worrying about having lots of different pairs of shorts, I've got 3 pairs of the same shorts. I've got three versions of this same shirt that I bought in Sri Lanka. Really fits me. I feel very comfortable in it. In the heat here, it's great. And so you'll often see me wearing the same clothes, but they're not the same clothes.
Yeah.
It's just the same.
Yeah.
Same item.
Yeah, interesting. And also, you know, when you know that you have a certain colouring, that you buy clothes with a colour that fits your colouring, your hair, your colour of eyes, that kind of thing. So people become very aware of that and are able to sort of zone in when they see that, I know will work for me. Other people get a little bit lost. Well, listen, we've got Kelly Lundberg on the line, CEO and founder of Style Me Divine. Hello, good afternoon to you, Kelly.
Good afternoon to you, and it's really interesting there to hear about the male aspect of shopping and how comfortable they are with such few pieces.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people can embrace this. I mean, the idea of the Project 333, so it's minimalist fashion and it's a challenge. We were reading about this a while ago, that inviting people to dress with 33 items or less for 3 months. So we'll get to that in a minute. But Kelly, you know, when you're working with people and helping people with their style and their look, I mean, do you find that people have got so much in their wardrobes that they're not even wearing, that they've never worn, or they're not wearing, they've not worn for, say, over a year?
Absolutely, and it could be a number of different reasons. People maybe have come and moved to Dubai and they've brought things with them that maybe don't necessarily suit their lifestyle now, or they just don't know how to wear them. Like, there's a number of different reasons, and when we do consultations with clients, we go through the wardrobe to identify what you like, why do you like it, because then it creates a shopping list of perhaps gaps that are missing, or to allow you to get something to mix and match an outfit that you already had but you're not wearing it because you didn't have the right shoes or you didn't have the right bag. And that's when it comes really clear. A lot of people sort of say, oh, well, you know, we have to wear clothes anyway. But the whole purpose of it is people don't spend enough time kind of planning the foundations in the beginning, and then it makes it a lot easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes it a lot easier to make the right choices for you.
Mm.
But in the long run, are we? Do you think that people actually, if they follow what your advice, in theory, they could be buying less, but what they buy really works better? You know, mixing and matching, getting the right color, 100%. Getting the right fit and cut.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's why they do it, because as much as you maybe spend some money on having a stylist, the long-term investment is that you save money, either because we get discount on what's purchased, or you save buying things, or you just buy the right things. And at the end of the day, you know, we work with fashion and style every day. If you're not in that industry, then how do you know what to buy? You know, I always kind of say I would never fix my own laptop or my own phone if it broke, because that's not my industry. I take it to an expert. So the same comes for clothing and style. You know, if you're not in that world, then how are you supposed to be good at it and make it sort of capsule, so to speak?
I know for sure that, you know, you've turned people around on what they've been buying thinking it looks good on them, and then you've shown them other ways, and you go, oh, okay, that actually, that color or that cut or that fit is absolutely more suited to my body shape and also my lifestyle or my personality or the job that I do. What about fast fashion, or, you know, the idea of consuming more stuff that costs less, which means we've got more choices in our wardrobe, however it might not be the best quality?
Yeah, and there is that element, and I think that's down to sort of certain people. I'm probably a little bit guilty personally of fast fashion, but I think it's just the industry that I work in, and when I'm in the stores, it's like, you know, being a sweetie shop. Oh, that really excites me. So I think it really then does depend on the person, because some people do prefer kind of quality pieces and to work with, you know, a really small wardrobe. Some people do prefer to keep reinventing it sort of every 6 months, add pieces in, take it out. The problem is when you don't edit. So you just keep buying and buying and buying fast fashion, and you end up with a rather large wardrobe that you're not wearing, you know, a fraction of it, the sort of whole 80-20 principle, you know, where you literally wear 20% of your wardrobe. And then the same sort of applies in business as well. So what I have found interesting, and I had an inquiry in recently, was very similar to what you were just chatting about before I came on air, was about this sort of uniform of style. In particular, men seem to find it a little bit easier, but this particular inquiry was an entrepreneur of a tech company, and he says, I want to find my own signature uniform, and I'll buy it in five trousers. And once we'd worked out what his uniform was, but he wanted a look like Zuckerberg or like Obama, or, you know, they all have their own signature style. And the reason behind that is called decision fatigue, where they only wear the same thing every single day. They have their own uniforms. They don't think about what they have to wear. And we did exactly this with a client.
Well, very interesting indeed. I guess being inspired by some of those tech millionaires, you know, where you see them, really, they do have that look and that uniform. Dylan?
Yeah,
I agree. I really like the concept of decision fatigue, is that if you can get up in the morning and you know exactly what you're going to be wearing because that's what you wear every day, that frees you up to actually then be a bit more dynamic, creative with everything else you want to do. But I also, I have a lot of friends that really enjoy the process of going through their wardrobe the night before and figuring out what they're going to wear the next day, because that in itself gives them a sense of control with regards to their own decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think it goes down to sort of personality. So what type of personality are you? And I think maybe men, and that's not a generalization, it's just the men that I've worked with, and I've seen the sort of the case studies on it, as it have been men, they seem to be happier with just having less to choose from and less to think about when it comes to clothing. Whereas I also think that's down to there is less choice for men. Women, we can wear a skirt, we can wear a dress, we can wear trousers, we can, you know, there's so much more to choose from. So maybe we want to keep that choice, but men seem much happier with having less, and that's their signature style.
Well, Steve Jobs, I suppose, is a really good example of that, wasn't it? And he was, again, and it sort of reflected in the design of with Apple, was all about minimalism and
simplicity
and use what you need, but make it look really good. And interesting indeed. So have you found people, is there ever a times when people really don't want to let go of something. You've advised them, Kelly, you've shown them, you've looked at their wardrobe and you're saying, you know, you don't need that. You don't. And they're going, no, I have to hang on to those shoes, or I have to hang on to that style that I've got there.
It's very seldom, and it's a question that, you know, I work with a lot of students that are coming, who are training to become stylists, and they always ask these sort of questions as well. And the ultimate perspective is when someone's decided to embark on a styling session, you know, you call up, you make the inquiry, you're paying for a service, you tend to listen to that person and kind of follow through. So it's very rare that they'll be like, no, I don't want to get rid of this. And you have to sort of judge the type of person, you know, if they're saying, oh, this was given to me by my husband and, you know, I couldn't get rid of it. You know, then you kind of have to say, okay, fine. But on a whole, when people are paying for a service, they listen to you. The most challenging ones tend to be, or challenging clients maybe tend to be, when it's a gift voucher.
Yeah.
So they've been bought by from their other halves or friends. So they're not mentally committed to maybe parting with clothes or trying on new styles.
Yeah, it's like if you go to a doctor, you don't go to a doctor and say, I'm sick, and he says, well, it's this, and then you say, nah, it's not that, it's something else. Because you've bought into, I completely understand what you're saying, you've bought into the relationship. I find it really funny if I was, I might be quite offended if someone said, Dylan, I bought you a session with a stylist, because I'd be wondering about what their point was in that situation. So I would have reservations. I can see people have reservations if it was a gift.
Well, I think, but what we get is a lot of men that try to do it in a nice sort of gesture, in terms of, like, you know, the woman will stand in front of the wardrobe, the wife will be like, I have nothing to wear, or they've had children, I don't know what to buy. And women, you know, men maybe too, look at the wardrobe and it becomes quite desperate, you know, and it's upsetting. And sometimes people don't want to go out. And I've heard this so many times, I'm not going out because I don't have the right clothes to wear, or I don't have the right option. So then they'll go out and go, well, I'll get them a stylist or something like that. So it does depend. I can see both arguments, or both feelings towards it, but it will still change your life.
So let's take a look at the Project 333. It's the minimalist fashion challenge that invites you to dress with 33 items or less for 3 months. Could you do that, Kelly?
Absolutely not.
How many pairs of shoes have you got? Do you know?
Oh, goodness. Let's put it this way, 33 times multiple. But again, I think it's maybe it's the industry that I'm in. I get the whole simplicity factor. I really do understand that. But I think 33 pieces, I looked at the styles, I've seen the website. It's not fashionable, the kind of looks that she's sort of pairing together. It's very basic. I think it depends on your industry. You know, people talk about this sort of capsule wardrobe, or, you know, one of the things is like, you only have one pair of sunglasses. And I think, well, yeah, your 33 pieces, if you lived in Scotland, could be one pair of sunglasses. But I think living in the environment here in Dubai, you probably want two, because you wear them more often. So I think in the concept is great, but I think 33 pieces, I think that would be challenging.
Kelly, thank you very much for your time today and really making a difference to people's lives. I know it's been wonderful seeing all how you've styled people, and with the business CEO and founder of Style Me Divine, Kelly Lundberg, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Imagine a life with less. Less stuff, less clutter, less stress, debt, discontent. A life with fewer distractions. Now imagine a life with more. More time, more meaningful relationships, more growth, contribution, and contentment. A life of passion, unencumbered by the trappings of the chaotic world around you. What you're imagining is an intentional life. Not a perfect life, not even an easy life, but a simple one.
Yeah, we've been exploring the simpler things in life. Minimalism, off the back of the documentary Minimalism, a documentary about the important things, with Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, coming out of the United States, and they're touring the USA with talks, and they've got their website and podcasts and this documentary that I discovered on Netflix. And Dylan Dolan, who's with me today, founder of Forward Thinking, he's a business coach and trainer. I got you onto watching it last evening, and you got very excited and inspired by it as well.
It just resonated so much. It's really interesting if you think about all the advertising and marketing that we see continually. It's all about buy more, 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 more. Then if you listen just to that teaser trailer there, the serenity of what if you had less? What if you didn't have to worry about things so much? If you didn't have to make all these decisions, that it then gives you more because you have more space to be yourself and live a more deliberate life.
Well, I've got Glyn on the line, and she's been listening to the show and says we've been following this process for the last few years. Good afternoon to you, Glyn.
Hi, good afternoon, Suzanne. It's Gwynny.
So, Gwynny, tell me, what have you been doing? What have you been embracing when it comes to minimalism?
We've just been living, just a much less stressful, not filled our lives with clutter. And it really has been a process, and it started a couple of years ago when we did arrive to Dubai. And, you know, you live the Dubai life. You get here and everything is so much bigger and beautiful big homes, and we just felt like we needed more, you know, to fill that space. So, you know, we had two lounges and we had five bedrooms, and, and so it continues. And, of course, with all of this comes an immense cost as well. So we just found that, you know, things were just really, really expensive, and with that we needed to work even harder to be able to pay for everything. So whether it was, you know, obviously having a big property, was it, you know, the maintenance of running a big property is really expensive too. And then we had a watershed moment. Something really significant happened in our lives, and we just reevaluated everything, and we just thought, you know what, this is just not worth it. At the end of the day, what really does matter is our health and those that are around us. And so we just started a process. It wasn't sort of just a it didn't happen overnight. It took time, but we did. We moved to a smaller home, and we just started to get rid of things. And then I found Joshua Becker was the author, and I found his book, and it just resonated with us as a family. And it's just been a process, and it's probably been about the last 5 years. But really now I could say that we've got to, you know, a place in our lives that we're living, you know, planning. We've had very, very firm goals in terms of having a debt-free life, and just enjoying everything that is around us, you know, just enjoying life, really, and all it has to offer us. So, and not getting caught in the hype of consumerism, you know, having to shop and having to have more. And that is what makes it tough, because particularly here, we're bombarded with messages every single weekend. You know, you get all the text messages and about sales, and there's so much to buy. But really, if you think about it, you just don't need all of those things. So it's been fun, and it's been wonderful to get my husband on board, and he's actually probably enjoying it even more than I am at this point.
Really?
He's been amazing. And so the rule was, with every new thing that came into the home, we needed to get rid of two. And he's doubled that and said, well, four.
That's a great rule.
Yeah, just clarify that again, Gwynny.
So if you bought any, so whatever we buy, I mean, they're obviously, and you know, and that was a big thing for me, was minimalism. It wasn't a home that was empty and, you know, minimalist, as you would imagine, if you in your mind think about it. It was something that, it was a home. When you walk into the home, you're surrounded by all the things that you love, but that everything that you have in your home, you either use or you love it, and that was it. So you didn't need, you know, hundreds of everything. But if you did need something new, be it a new shirt or be it a new gym, you know, pair of pants, two things need to go. So two other gym items need to go. You need to get rid of those. You need to donate those to somebody who may need them. You know, and there's just so many, so many wonderful places that you can actually send these things to. And with that, we have reduced all the clutter in our home. I mean, I had a friend visiting recently, and she looked in my wardrobe and she said, "Oh my goodness, like you have no clothes." And it was a shock to her, and to me, it was fine. I find something lovely to wear every single day. So, you know, it's just And that's really what it is. And so my husband has enjoyed that too. And for us, it's kind of not using that, you know, not using that money and putting it towards things that are wasteful, but rather saving it. So it's not like we're not using and enjoying what we're working really hard for, but that we are, you know, we're saving those for amazing holidays or experiences or special times with friends, and then really having a very, very a very, very firm goal in getting rid of debt and living a debt-free life. And so we have a, you know, we have a date in our minds, and that's how you can do it. And often you think, well, can it make a difference if I just put an extra 100 or 200 or whatever it is aside? But it actually does make a huge difference. And I think that's probably what he has enjoyed so much more about it, you know, because even when he goes to work, he feels that I have a purpose. I'm doing this. And this is what, you know, where we're working towards. So it's been really
good.
And
Gwyn, how close are you to that target now?
Incredibly close. In fact, we're hoping, I mean, we have a goal that probably in the next 18 months we will be completely debt-free.
And will that be debt-free with savings as well, or is that just to get you to the sort of critical point of no more debt, full stop?
So we will have savings. We obviously
Fantastic.
Have, you know, investments and we've obviously, you know, that we've done. And we've tried to be wise with those, but yeah, that in fact we won't own, you know, we won't owe anything on our mortgage or, you know,
wow.
Cars or anything like that. Yeah, and it is actually possible. It truly is possible, just with putting those little bits aside. So what we do is we take out the savings first before we pay anything else.
It's really good. Yeah, really, really good.
At the end.
Yeah, so you've totally embraced the minimalist lifestyle. This is what Joshua was talking about before and what comes through the documentary and the talks. So it's about finding freedom. He talks about how freeing it is. Is that how you feel? Has it freed you up?
I think absolutely and completely, you know, and I think for my husband too, you know, it really does give you a sense of freedom. We don't, you know, we're not... stressing about our future, you know, as much as we did a couple of years ago. And, you know, some people don't think about it, but obviously as you get older, you realize you have, you know, much less time. And of course, as we've all witnessed and or had friends that have found themselves in situations where they may have lost their job and, you know, have debt. And what that does to a family is incredibly destructive. So we just wanted to put ourselves into a situation that we never felt that we had this, you know, heaviness hanging over ourselves, yeah, it has been incredibly freeing. I mean, you wake up in the morning, I feel just a real sense of contentment. That's the only way I can describe it. It's just a comfort within yourselves.
Gwynnie, thank you very much for the call today. It's really great to hear. And I'm really pleased, you know, that you connected with us today, because we've been talking to Joshua in the United States, but you're right here in the UAE and you've already embraced the minimalist lifestyle. So thank you so much for talking to us. Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.
Take
care.
Thank you, Suzanne. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, so really interesting points there. So just going over that, you know, if you're going to buy something, then you have to let go of something. So you've never got an abundance of stuff. So again, this sort of mindful buying with a purpose, sharing values with your husband, you know, there's a goal there to be debt free, but they've still got savings. Again, highlighting that there's nothing wrong with having money, there's nothing wrong with having things, as long as with the things it's mindful and there's a purpose to it, it serves you in some way, it's not just frivolous.
Yeah, it adds value. Rather than, as you know, rather than just going through the mall and buying stuff for the sake of buying stuff, if you know that you're going to have to trade with something. And what I loved about what Gwyn was saying is that she's actually trading, they started off trading two. So if you buy one, you have to lose two. That's a really good trick to play with your mind, where you then have to force yourself, now I have to ask the question, do I really need this? Is this going to add value? Because I lose something if I take this. They've gone to the point where they're now doing four, so they're actually decluttering by buying.
Yes.
Yes, that's actually what they're doing, which is fantastic.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Do you think you could let go of a few more things in your life? What could you let go of? Let me know. And it is personal, and there are lots of different ways you can be a minimalist. I've got a list here from Psychology Today, which is very interesting to see that the different ways. It could be in a small way, it could be in a much bigger way. We'll be hearing more from Joshua Joshua with regards to the minimalist movement in the United States and sharing a little bit of this. I think this song is very apt for Gwynny and everybody else who's thinking about minimalism. Very interesting discussion today about minimalism being brought to our attention because of the film Minimalism and the things we... what's it called again? Can't remember now.
The Minimalist film?
Yeah, Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. And we've been hearing how people can grade up by really grading down and gaining that success, what is perceived to be success, happiness, by following the simpler things, having a simpler way of life.
Yeah, having a deliberate life. When I was doing the research for this, Suzanne, I watched the film, I found it fascinating, had a long discussion with my wife, and I spoke to a few of my friends about it, saying I'm coming on the show today. And a friend of mine, Kamar, he said to me, I got married and we went on this amazing trip to Kenya to stay with a Maasai village, and we were so impressed by how happy these people were, how welcoming, how warm they were, and Maasai being the indigenous tribe of Kenya. And we had, you know, our iPads, our phones, our cameras and all the rest of it. And they were quite interested in our stuff, but, you know, they were really happy with who they were and really happy with themselves. And we said to them, you know, it's amazing how happy and content you guys are. You know, do you ever think about going to, you know, moving to the West and living a bigger life? And they'd say, but you guys are always coming here to be happy. We're already here. We've realized, and they had the cognizance, they had the presence of mind to realize, all of these guys are coming here to be happy. Maybe we've got quite a good thing here.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Often, you know, as soon as we've got any leave, we want to go somewhere that's simpler, quieter. Yeah. We want to connect with nature. We want to connect with people that seem to be living a simpler life. So why can't we embrace that into our everyday lives more? People have different responsibilities, different priorities, but ultimately we could scale down a little bit, I think. Ahmed is texting to say, if I could get rid of a lot of old things from my childhood, I would, but my mother collects a lots of things. I'm 31 and stressed out about clutter in our village, but also about meaningless social interactions that drain me. And I think this kind of goes hand in hand.
Well, get rid of Facebook, Ahmed, firstly, and just start making some choices about the people that are around you. It's just really interesting when you start to actually think about what really is important. I think there are certain moments in our lives where we can actually make a decision and say, what is it that's important to me? I've been fortunate to be able to do that twice in my life and had complete career transitions because of it. I was on a 50k salary at the age of 30 in the UK, very successful in the internet trade, and got to a point where I was deeply unhappy because I'd made 150 people that were my friends redundant, moved the whole operation to India. And then they got to a point where they offered me redundancy. I took it, and my next job was working with children in an inner city area in Camberwell on an adventure playground. So I was a play worker there, earning next to nothing, but it was amazing. It was wonderful.
Purpose for you.
Absolutely.
Gave you purpose.
Absolutely.
Sally's texting to say, my brother-in-law decluttered a few years ago. He and his partner rent their houses out, one on Airbnb, the other yearly. They house sit in fab houses around beachside Melbourne, and one leads to another. Free rent. They have more offers than needed and have enough street credibility to house sit in Europe or the US, all for free. They often have to look after an animal alongside that. So, you know, lifestyle choices. When I was in Bali recently, we were staying in an Airbnb property, absolutely stunning, beautiful. And the family that owned that were from the United States. He was a music teacher, and they had bought this and they rented it out via Airbnb whilst they travelled the world, him and his family. And he does online courses in music, and that's how he, you know, funded his lifestyle. So yeah, there's the, I suppose it feels like it's getting easier to maybe adopt and find the life that you want, as opposed to feeling that you, there's an, I mean, of course we still feel that we have expectations, but maybe now, because of the internet and because of the world getting smaller in a sense, we can start to change the business model a little bit. We don't have to be in an office always. We can be more creative, and it's becoming more accepting, accepted between people to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at all the things that have changed with the internet, Airbnb is a classic example, and it's, you know, it's created a whole new economy. I do think that it's going to take another turn again soon, because I think there's going to be people are going to start looking at more legislation and more kind of contractual stuff where there is a certain level of quality, if you want. But you know, it's really interesting how those things manage themselves with peer feedback. Because I have friends that have an apartment in South Africa, and they are so keenly aware of, if they don't answer within a certain amount of time, if the quality of the place isn't good enough. So I think that really drives itself as an economy.
But it's all about that living with less.
Yes.
Simplifying your life.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't mean you have to go without, and it doesn't mean you can't still earn money and all of those things. I'll just quickly add in here, Psychology Today, if you want to check this out for yourself, if you're interested in finding out more about minimalism, maximizing minimalism, how many different kinds of minimalism can you juggle at the same time? So there are many ways to be a minimalist, and each kind can add a lot of value to your life. You can be a stuff minimalist and try to get by with less stuff. You can be an open loop minimalist and try to get by with fewer thoughts running through your mind. You can be an expense minimalist and try to get by on less money. You can be a decision minimalist and try to make fewer decisions each day, especially decisions about things outside of your area of expertise or core creative endeavors. And you can be a distraction minimalist and try to create an environment for yourself that allows for maximal focus. You can be a motivational friction minimalist and try to create a lifestyle that fits your natural desires better, so you can operate with more passion and less willpower. And you can be an interpersonal conflict minimalist and try to strike new social agreements with people so there's less drama in your life. And I like this one. You can be a hassle minimalist and try to reduce the number of steps it takes to get things done.
We had a Netflix and chill moment at the weekend with one of my best friends, who very pleased that he's moved back to the region from Kuala Lumpur. And we started watching a stand-up comedian. And I said, I need to stop watching this, because it was really acerbic, aggressive, vitriolic comedy, which sometimes I like. But I was like, I don't want that today. I want to feel quite happy and pleasant in your company. I want to remove stuff that's going to make me feel unhappy. And I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's just about acknowledging, this is what this is going to do to me. This is going to be the end result. Remove it.
So we started off talking about the documentary Minimalism, a documentary about the important things, with Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. And we've posted up their details and their website. You can connect with them, theminimalists.com, on our blog post at dubaii1038.com/Dubai Today. And just to note that Joshua really sort of started to embark a minimalist lifestyle after his mother passed away and the breakdown of his marriage. And he was very successful. He was in a corporate job, earning lots of money, but he just wasn't feeling fulfilled or happy. So have a listen here to Josh as we round off the show. And we asked him, how do you think your mother would feel today about the life choices you're making?
I think she'd be a lot happier, because My actions now are in line with my values. And I really think that is the key to living a more meaningful life. And even back then, if I'm being honest with myself, I didn't even know what my values were at the time. And so how could you possibly align your daily actions, your short-term actions, with those long-term values if you don't even know what they are? And so By sort of clearing the clutter from my life, I was able to get clear on what my values are and then align what I do today with the person that I want to be, the person that I aspire to be. And it's sort of like a horizon. You know, I'm 35 now, I aspire to be like my 40-year-old self. But of course, once I'm 40, there'll be a new horizon. Once you get to the horizon, there's always a new horizon. And so when I turn 40, I'll be aspiring to be a better version of myself. And it's certainly not a perfect life, and it's definitely not an easy life, but it's a simple one.
And I think one of the key things that he said there is getting to the point where you understand what your values actually are and what it is that is important to you and who are the people that are important to you around you. And we live in such a transient environment as well within Dubai that sometimes we can get confused by the volume of choices and the need to connect. Just rein it back in and think about what really is important. We have to ask a question.
Dylan Dolan, thank you very much, as always, for your time today. Founder of Forward Thinking, business coach and trainer. Thank
Pleasure.
You.
Pleasure. Lovely to see you.
You're going to go and declutter the cupboards now. You get back.
I might go and watch the movie again first.
And yeah, I have to say thank you to Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus from The Minimalists, The Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. You can check out their TED Talks as well and follow their journey on social media there in the United States. And a big thank you to Joe McKibben as well for producing the show, and thanks to you for all your messages today, and I'll be back with you tomorrow from 11 a.m. Have a great day.